This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Welcome to the Christian War Room, and thank you, Dale, for the introduction. Today, we've got an interesting subject, and it's probably not, you know, really anti-Christian. Maybe on the surface it doesn't. What we said is, the big scripture we always quote in the Christian War Room is 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4. For the weapons of our warfare are carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. So it's about strongholds, arguments, and high things that exalt themselves against the knowledge of God. Now, when we look at the subject we are dealing with today, which is the so-called Agenda 21 subject, you know, this is all based on, you know, certain concepts people have. It's on the surface may all be good and it may all be Christian. I mean, in the end, you know, when we look at our environment, we should be good stewards. We shouldn't be poisoning our rivers, our lakes. We should, you know, understand the cycles in nature and make nature work for us and not work against it, or not, you know, work in a way that destroys nature around us and ultimately poisons our basis for survival. That is really, you know, positive, and you can understand this, and it's there. But there's sometimes a sinister agenda. You know, you can and again we come to this whole concept of the worship of Gaia, the Mother Earth, the Mother Goddess, the Goddess worship. And and there's sometimes a very sinister way of you know, the things that are going on within this world, that that we are moved into a position to go to an extreme, to not really be stewards anymore, but to treat nature around us as something God has given us, God has created for us, and we need to look after, but as something that is over and above us and that we need to worship. And there's sometimes the differences are very, very tiny, and slipping from one area to the other, it doesn't take an awful lot. Okay, what's been happening? So there's been a group of people. some people decided there's something like global warming going on. And again, it's interesting as well where all this is coming from. There was some stuff going on in the 70s where people said, because of all the carbon dioxide emissions, you know, the climate should be warming up. In the 70s, they thought that we were approaching an ice age, that the winters were getting colder and colder, and then suddenly they warmed up. And despite, you know, a lot more emissions and emissions going crazy, suddenly global warming stopped, and they had to call it climate change because they couldn't really verify that, you know, that the temperatures were rising up and that sea levels were rising and so on. So we've gone from one to the other. And I mean, this whole thing has been going on, you know, environmentalism has been going on from for about 20 odd years. As long as I'm a kid, I can remember that there was something going on. Some of it was very reasonable and sensible. Others, you know, is going a little bit over the top, and we are coming and hitting something which is like Gaia worship. Okay, Agenda 21 talks about this stuff. The way they try to sort of implement this is to get cities to implement Agenda 21. So it's not done on a government basis. It's not done that the state is doing X, Y, Z, but it's sort of done through the back door, where city councils are approached to implement Agenda 21. The whole concept is very expensive. You know, they're trying to create some stuff which is very expensive. And again, it's nature is elevated above man. So there are, I think in the States, they've got some concept of wildlife corridors and so on, which have to be there, and nobody can move into those areas, and people are not allowed to be anywhere near it, and so on. And to me, this is very concerning. This is very concerning, where suddenly there's a shift in mentality, where people are secondary and nature is primary. You know? And And in my opinion, this cannot be right. This cannot be right. Okay, how should we approach this? First of all, we need to understand what's really going on. We need to understand the sinister policies which are sort of implemented by Agenda 21. And then the next thing as well is we need to make our voice be heard. And there are several ways of doing this. Again, we are just a war room here. We are looking about strategies. And I have to admit, I wouldn't have the time to go to council meetings, but it might be something for somebody to pick up upon and to get into this. I'll give you one story, and then we're going to move into Agenda 21. It's going to be split into three sessions. The first one is I was once in a Christian resources exhibition, and there was a guy next to me, and he was a businessman. So he had a busy life, you know, and everything, but he wanted to encourage people to become governors at schools. Now, that's a British thing. I'm not quite sure how it works in the States. So maybe the school board or whatever. The parents are invited to, you know, become governors and to join a school board or, you know, have some sort of supervisory function. And anyway, he made a big deal out of it. I mean, to me, it was very strange. I couldn't really relate to it, even though I worked in education. But sort of over time, it sort of dawned on me why this is important. It might just only be, you know, a couple of hours a month, but very often, very big important decisions are made within schools by the governors. And the governors are used as sometimes as a moral guide and, you know, as a guide for maybe even the curriculum delivery. And we know that there's a lot of stuff in our school curricula, which is coming in these days, which is ideologies and agendas which are pushed by fringe groups and which are enforced upon school boards. And this goes all the way from teaching kids in a predominantly Christian environment what Islam is like and teaching them that to the LGBT agenda to secularism, to evolution. Things like that, you know, as the only scientific concept and barring or forbidding any mention of creationism as an alternative model or, you know, as a scientific model. And so we've got like a lot of these things where it's important, where important decisions are made by the school board, by the governors, and the more Christians we've got within this, the more influence we can have within our societies and ultimately on our kids as well. And we can see how our kids are going to be educated. Just one example. Okay, Agenda 21 is a similar thing. Maybe we need to get onto boards. We need to go to these meetings. And once we understand what this agenda is all about, try and challenge what people are trying to do to us and how people are trying to affect our towns and our cities and our environments, very often going into a great amount of debt for something which is just a dead duck. Okay, let's listen to the Agenda 21 talk. It's going to be split in three parts, so stay tuned here in the Christian War Room.
I want to talk to you today about a topic that is very important to me, and I think it's going to be very important to all of us. It's Agenda 21. And I've entitled this presentation, Agenda 21, Bankrupting American Cities into Utopia. And I'm going to explain the title to you as we go along, but first of all, I want to get a little bit of information from you. How many people in this room have heard of Agenda 21? Anybody? Raise your hands. Okay, good. How many people in this room believe it is a conspiracy theory? Raise your hands. Okay. Okay, we've got a few. When you talk about Agenda 21, when you mention Agenda 21, if you talk to people who have heard about it some, they're going to tell you it's a paranoid conspiracy theory. And if you hear it referenced in the mainstream media at all, that's what they're going to say. It's a paranoid conspiracy theory. Last year, one of the candidates running for Senate who won gave a position paper on Agenda 21. I'm going to tell you who it is at the end of this presentation. And the mainstream media said he is espousing a paranoid conspiracy theory as part of his campaign. So this is how they silence us. But, you know, there's an old expression that the best trick the devil ever played on the human race was to convince people he didn't exist. And that's what people who say Agenda 21 is just nonsense are doing. It is a real thing. Now, there are real conspiracy theories tied to it that are nonsense. And I will tell you that from the get-go. If you start looking online and you put Agenda 21 in a search engine, you're going to find a lot of websites, and some of them have crazy stuff on them. Not everything that's written about it is true. But the document itself is real. Agenda 21 is a policy document for the United Nations Conference on the Environment and Development, commonly called the Earth Summit, that was held in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. I've given you the link here to the document itself on the web, on the PowerPoint. It's the Sustainable Development Document .un.org. Or, if you can't write all that down today, you can put United Nations Agenda 21 1992 into a search engine, and you can look for the official UN site. When you do that, as I say, you're going to get lots of websites. Ignore those. Go to the official UN website, www.un.org. You're going to see the real documents that are there. They're online for everyone to see. The purpose of this document is to create a global partnership for sustainable development, and that is from the preamble to the Agenda 21 policy document, first paragraph. Now, what does it mean? What's it about? What's it designed to do? Agenda 21 calls for, quote, a profound reorientation of society, of all human society, unlike anything the world has ever experienced. A major shift in the priorities of both governments and individuals, and an unprecedented redeployment of human and financial resources. This shift will demand concern for the environmental consequences of every human action, be integrated into individual and collective decision-making at every level. Well, what the heck does that mean? That's a lot of long speak. What does it mean? Can we say it in plain, simple English? Well, somebody did. This is from President Obama's speech. He was candidate Obama. May 17th, 2008. He gave this speech in Roseburg, Oregon, which is not far from Portland. Portland, Oregon is a mecca for environmental policies. They love environmentalism. And their smart growth policies that we're going to talk about today were a model for the things that are happening in our city. So this was a very, very strategic location to give this speech. He gave it there because they would get it. And he said what I just read you in English. We can't drive our SUVs and eat as much as we want and keep our homes on 72 degrees at all times, whether we're living in the desert or we're living in the tundra, and just expect that every other country is going to say, oh, okay, you guys just keep using 25% of the world's energy, even though you only account for 3% of the world's population. You can see this speech on YouTube. It took me a while to find it. You need to put in Obama's speech, May 2008, Roseburg, Oregon, and you can see this clip of this speech. It was very significant. You know, we watch a lot of political stuff in my house, and my mother saw this speech. She said, this is the speech. This is what really encapsulates his candidacy. And it turns out that's true, because that was his climate change speech. And then, October 31st, 2008, he gave another speech, and this is just one little clip from it. This was 5 days before the presidential election, 2008. We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America. Very significant. It was 5 days from the election. Now, I want to tell you right off the bat, this is not an Obama bashing fest. The policies that we're going to talk about today are espoused by leaders of both parties. They are forwarded by leaders of both parties. This is not a Republican or Democrat issue. It's not about left or right. It's about freedom. It's about the Constitution, and it's about our way of life. People of both political parties endorse and work for Agenda 21, and people of both political parties work against it. The picture on the left is the cover of a book written by a woman named Rosa Coire, who is the founder of Democrats Against UN Agenda 21. She speaks all over the country to tell people her experiences fighting Agenda 21 in California, where she lives. This woman is a self-described liberal Democrat. She is liberal on every policy issue that you can be liberal on. You just go down the list. She's pro-choice. She is openly gay. She is married to her partner. She is a 9/11 truther. She, you know, every single one, you look for her. But she is also a commercial land appraiser in California. And she began to understand from working in California about land use that something was wrong, really wrong. And she got involved with looking at this issue to find out what was going on. And she founded this group, and she wrote this book. This is a nonfiction book, and I really recommend this. I just read this book 2 weeks ago in getting ready for this talk, but I had seen a lot about it before that. And she talks about real practical things that she did in California, in her city, to fight against sustainable development and land use, and some simple things that she did that weren't even expensive that worked. The other person who's done a lot to bring awareness to this issue is Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, you may be familiar with him. He was formerly of CNN and then formerly of Fox. Now he has his own network, The Blaze TV. He has the website, theblaze.com. Has written extensively about Agenda 21. He's done a lot of exposés. He's done an exposé of the chairman of the Earth Summit, Maurice Strong. He's done a lot of work. The book that I put up here, the title, the cover here, is Agenda 21. And this book was actually published last November 2012. This is a fiction book. It is about his futuristic idea of what the world would look like as Agenda 21 is implemented. So it's very interesting. I have not read it. I have read excerpts from it, but it gets good reviews. But, you know, it's not just the guys in the tinfoil hats. I'm not saying that Rosa Corey and Glenn Beck are in tinfoil hats, but when you talk about Agenda 21, that's the answer, the pushback you get. And that's guys in tinfoil hats. It's Area 51. It's space aliens in Roswell. It's all this stuff that nobody can prove is not true. It's not real. It is real. Some really mainstream publications have started coming out against Agenda 21, partly because of the work of people like Rosa Corey and Glenn Beck, who were willing to write about it and talk about it when everybody's making fun of them. Last year, Larry Bell, who is an endowed professor who leads the graduate program in space architecture for the University of Houston, did an article about Agenda 21 for Forbes. And that's not guys in tinfoil hats. That's very well-educated people. National Review has done articles about it. So has the Heritage Foundation. I did not become aware of Agenda 21 through any of these things. One reason I loved Rosa Corey's book, her story about how she found out about this really represents my story too. I have worked in real estate in El Paso for 15 years. I was a mortgage broker for 15 years in the city. And during that time, I saw all of the strange things that were going on, just really strange things. And they kept getting stranger and stranger. And then in 2010, I began to see the Dodd-Frank bill was introduced in the spring of 2010. And I began to read this bill because I was in mortgage finance, and I wanted to see how it was going to impact all of us. And as I began to read it, I got really concerned because this bill was going to strip away Americans' rights to own houses. They weren't going to be able to finance houses. They weren't going to be able to buy houses. And I didn't understand why. We've always been told that home ownership is the American dream. But this bill was going to change that, and I wanted to know why. So I started writing a blog. I started writing a blog called Protection Money. And as I wrote the blog, I started researching Dodd-Frank and trying to find out what was going on. And then in November of 2010, I saw another bill come through. Dodd-Frank did pass. It passed in July. The president signed it into law July of 2010. And it got very little attention. You know, Obamacare got huge amounts of attention, and there were town hall meetings and people screaming. And Dodd-Frank, not so much. It was sold as we're going to punish those bad people on Wall Street. But in November of 2010, I saw another bill. And the other bill that was also by Chris Dodd. Chris Dodd is the Dodd and Dodd-Frank, and he put through this bill, the Livable Communities Act. It was supposed to be his final bill as a senator because he was going to retire. And it was his signature piece of legislation. And when I read that bill, I began to understand why Dodd-Frank had been passed. You see, Dodd-Frank was about... It was not really about destroying the Wall Street banks. It actually helps Wall Street banks. Dodd-Frank was about killing the American dream. Like Obamacare, Dodd-Frank is a huge framework bill. So lots of policy and lots of legislation has to be written as part of that framework. And part of that policy that's been written is just now being written and will be implemented next year. And we have industry studies that say that when that is fully implemented, as much as 60% of the U.S. population will not qualify to buy houses, will not qualify for home mortgages. So we're being transformed from a nation of 60% homeowners, which has been traditional, to 60% renters, permanent renters, people who are not going to be able to buy property. This is a big shift. It's a big shift for our nation. It's a big shift for us. But the Sustainable Living Act was all about we need to be in small communities. We need to be in small housing. We need to be in public transportation. It was about fostering those things. That's when I began to find out about Agenda 21. What was it? What did it mean? Did it exist? And I didn't go to conspiracy theory websites. I went to the UN documents. And then from there, I started looking, and I started finding other things, and I started finding out more. You know, if you keep looking, you will keep finding. Seek and you will find. Agenda 21 calls for the abolition of private property. Now, if you go to certain websites, for instance, the ICLEI website, we're going to give you that in a minute, ICLEI says that Agenda 21 does not call for the abolition of private property. That's one of the conspiracy theories. But it's not a conspiracy theory. It's true. It is in their documents. This document is the June 1976 preamble to the UN Conference on Human Settlements. If you show this to somebody, they say, well, that's not Agenda 21. And it's not. It's 15 years before. But it's a precursor to Agenda 21. And in the Agenda 21 documents, living spaces are called human settlements. And it says very plainly, private land ownership is the principal instrument of the accumulation and concentration of wealth, and therefore contributes to social injustice. So public control of land use is indispensable. You know, the first part of that statement is a true statement. We know that the ability to own property and the ability to own a house is the primary wealth-building tool for Americans. Your house is the most expensive purchase that most of us will ever make. It's how we build wealth. It's how we build equity. It used to be called our nest egg for our retirement because you could sell it, you could pay it off, you could live there free. To take that away from Americans, the ability to do that, changes our way of life tremendously. This next slide is from an Agenda 21 document. Private ownership to be replaced with communal ownership. This is Chapter 7, Promoting Sustainable Human Development. The objective of Agenda 21 is to provide for the land requirements of human settlement development through environmentally sound physical planning and land use and the encouragement of communally and collectively owned and managed land. So I kept researching. I got involved. I wanted to find out more, and ultimately I wanted to help other people find out more. Warren mentioned the two books, which he has read. I shared them with him, and they explain Agenda 21. These are fiction. Just like Glenn Beck's book is fiction. But today, we're not going to talk about fiction. Today, we're going to talk about facts. Because Jesus said that if we know the truth will make us free. So we're going to talk about facts today. And everything I'm going to tell you today is going to sound outrageous, but you can verify all of it. Go online, do some research. I'm going to give you some websites. It's all true. There are three parts of Agenda 21, and they are commonly known as the three E's. They are environmental justice, equity, which means social equity, and the economy. The equity part of this is the redistribution of wealth from the West. The premise of Agenda 21, the primary premise, is that the West is too affluent. Our system of life makes us affluent. And that affluence means that we consume too much and we produce too much because we have a system that allows us to consume and produce too much. We are stripping away the world's resources, consuming and producing too much. And because we are affluent and wealthy, and we have a great standard of living, other countries want to become like us. And so they consume and produce too much, too, because of us. So the answer to that is to redistribute wealth. Now, in America, when we talk about wealth redistribution, we compare ourselves to ourselves. So we think about, well, we're going to take everybody who's below the poverty line, and we're going to bring them up above the poverty line. Or some of us may think, well, we're going to take the people like Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, the late Steve Jobs before he passed, and we're going to siphon off some of their money, and we're going to give it to some of the lower classes and elevate everybody. Or, you know, there might even be some really unrealistic people out there who think, you know, we're going to take the middle class and make them like Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and spread it all around, and we'll all have plenty. That's not wealth redistribution in a global sense. That's not what it means. How many of you in this room saw Dinesh D'Souza's 2016? Okay. If you haven't seen this movie, a lot of you have not, you need to see it because he explains what wealth redistribution means to an environmental, to a globalist. He never mentions Agenda 21, but he mentions globalism. To a globalist, wealth redistribution means bringing the entire United States down to the level of a third world country like Kenya or Indonesia. And he goes to Kenya and Indonesia in this documentary and shows us what that is. That's wealth redistribution. To a globalist, where it's not about comparing us to us or elevating us or lowering us. It's about bringing the whole country down. The premise of this is that we have to abandon free market systems in favor of globalized central planning. And we have to do that basically to get poorer and to stop using up all the resources. Now, let's start with part one, environmental justice. This is best demonstrated with a picture, because a picture really is worth 1,000 words. This picture is a map of the proposed North American wildways from the Wildlands Network website. The Wildlands Network was set up. It's a non-governmental organization. All of the UN processes right now rely heavily on NGOs, non-governmental organizations. And the former chair of the Earth Summit, Maurice Strong, said that NGOs should actually govern the world, help govern the world, along with the academia and the media, that they should run the world. So this is their map. This is from their current website. Their current website says that currently about 5% of our land use in the U.S. is public land use, and the other 95% is private use. I don't know whether that's a current statistic or not, because the government has been acquiring land very, very rapidly over the past few years. But assuming that it is, everything that you see that looks like a big highway, these big gray pieces, are areas where the U.S. is to be rewilded. And if you look, it actually goes through Central America, down to the tip of South America. All this is going to be public land. It's going to be rewilded. Think national forests. According to the website, people will not be allowed to live in these areas. We will be allowed to visit them, to take pictures, to do sustainable hunting and primitive camping. But these areas are going to be for the animals. And some of them are big, scary animals, because they believe that dangerous predators should be reintegrated back into their original habitats. And then this is environmental justice. The earth belongs to the animals just as much as it belongs to us. You know, the Bible says that God gave us dominion over the earth. We're just supposed to be stewards. We're supposed to protect it. But rewilding it is just, it's just ridiculous. Then here's the thing. In the United States, we do not appreciate what this means, because we have always had this concept of private land usage, private land ownership. In other countries where the government, any form of government, has owned large parts of land, the people have great suffering. In England, we hear a lot about Robin Hood. And I actually wrote a post about this last year. Where's Robin Hood when we need him? The Robin Hood legend came from Robin Hood hunting deer in the king's forest, because the people were hungry and suffering because it was a crime to kill a deer in the king's forest. One of the first major laws that they passed, or charters that the English passed after the Magna Carta, was a charter giving the people rights to the forest, because having no rights to the forest causes so much suffering. So when you say we are going to take about 50% of the U.S. land and rewild it, you're creating a lot of suffering. I also would like to point out to you, this goes right through El Paso, Texas. All of our houses, everything, the East Coast, the West Coast, and where we live. So this creates something else. It creates rationing. You have carved out a lot of property that nobody's allowed to live in. So the rest is rationed. Everything in UN Agenda 21 creates rationing, creates scarcity and rationing. Remember the problem. The problem is American affluence. We consume too much. We produce too much. We're destroying the world. We're inspiring other countries to consume and produce too much. So we have to change, and our affluence has to change. And the first way, the most important way to change that, is to move from a free market system to a central planning system. And that is the goal of what everything that the governments have been doing for years is about.
The next part of the talk is tomorrow, so stay tuned here at the Christian War Room. Very important stuff to really get into and to find out what is happening with our societies and what are the people doing who make those decisions, and they are falling for these lies. Okay, this is the Christian War Room.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.